This is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, here with Tim Henney. Well, world-renowned psychologist Dr. Xavier Amador will come to Park City in November. It's part of Connect Summit County's education program. He has an approach and a training program to help professionals, family, and friends of those with mental illness to better understand and be able to communicate. The LEAP program stands for Listen, Empathize, Agree, and Partner. It shows you how to quickly gain the trust of someone you're at odds with. When you do these things, listen, empathize, agree, and partner, you stop trying to convince the other person that they're wrong or simply misguided. Instead, you listen in a new way that conveys respect for the person's point of view and a complete lack of judgment. Well, it might sound easy, but as we know, most people have a very hard time doing this very simple thing. But once you learn LEAP, it is easy. We're happy to preview this training course that will be held November 15th, 16th, and 17th, both in Salt Lake City at the University of Utah, then here in Park City at Park City Hospital's Blair Education Center. Dr. Xavier Amador, welcome to The Mountain Life. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Great to be here.
So you'll be coming to Park City mid-November. And you are going to be teaching the LEAP approach, which is listen, empathize, agree, and partner. LEAP. And I would imagine that, of course, in human interaction, all of these verbs work for all of us. But who in particular is your target audience here?
Well, I should say first that the verbs, as you put it, are really quite different than normal listening and normal empathizing, and the agreements that we come to with persons with very serious mental illness, and that's who this was developed for, people with schizophrenia, bipolar, schizoaffective, and other brain disorders that render the person, among other things, unable to comprehend, really unable to see or understand that they've changed, that the voices they hear, for example, aren't real, or the delusional ideas are implausible, and if it's bipolar disorder, that the grandiose ideas or the irritable manic states, the depression, etc., is unusual and would really benefit from treatment. So we're talking about persons with these, really a range of psychiatric brain disorders, who among other symptoms have a symptom that renders them unable to understand they're ill. So listening to that person, I could listen to that person and have them say, I'm not sick. There's something wrong with me. I need to get out of the hospital, or I never need to see a doctor. And I could respond with, as I did for many years with my oldest brother, who had a psychiatric illness. He had schizophrenia. I would listen to him, and I would say, well, but Henry, you know, you're not thinking straight. You know, your brain chemistry is obviously very confused. I mean, You think mom's the devil. Her eyes are laser beams. It makes no sense. You need help. That kind of listening got me nowhere but into conflict with a brother who I loved dearly, and he loved me. And we fought and argued like so many families do with loved ones with mental illness who don't understand they're ill. And all that listening and empathizing with them didn't work. So it's a very unique kind of listening and empathizing, which is grounded in understanding the symptom of unawareness, which has got a tongue twister of a name, which I'm sure you'll ask me about at some point.
Well, why don't we go into how this might look differently with your older brother, Henry? How would the LEAP approach, what do you say now to him?
Well, first, I mean, the LEAP approach is grounded in a great deal of science on communication and also on what leads to acceptance of treatment offers. And what reduces treatment dropouts? So people who get started on medication, they look to be better from the perspective of just about everybody around them, the family, the doctors, the nurses, the social workers. But the person secretly stops taking their medication, and then relapses. So what works? What works is building a relationship where that person genuinely feels listened to with respect and no judgment. So what does that look like with LEAP? When my brother or any of the many, many people I've worked with over the years say, there's nothing wrong with me, I'm not sick, you're the sick one, not me, I don't need help, rather than trying to educate after I've listened, I do what's called leap reflective listening. And I reflect back with that, what I've just heard without judgment or and with a great deal of respect, you know, and without disrespecting them. So what does that sound like? So, Henry, what you're telling me, you know, and I'm sorry I didn't listen before. I might throw in an apology. That's one of the leap tools. And I'm sorry I didn't listen before. What you're saying is there's nothing wrong with you. You're not mentally ill. You don't need medicine. And maybe he's thrown in there, and I'm sick and tired of you pushing me, and I'll reflect that right back and say, you know, what you're saying is you're sick and tired of me pushing you, and then I'll use leap strategic empathy. It's very strategic. It's focused on emotion stemming from the symptom, because people typically don't empathize with the conflict and pain we're causing when we try and convince someone they're ill, and they're certain they're not. So what would I add? You know, Henry, if I were you, I'd be upset also. I'd be angry with me also.
Dr.
So that's how, you know, it's very, very different kind of listening and empathizing than people naturally would do.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Dr. Amador, I'm curious about perception and reality, and maybe you can help me and our listeners, because they might share this disconnect or kind of, you know, what is actually happening in this realm. My perception is that, I don't know, not such a long time ago, bipolar, schizophrenia, severe mental illness was kind of dealt with in a different way. We kept it in the shadows. We kept it under the rug. We kept it as a family member. We kept it in institutions that nobody, you know, knew about or heard about. And now we're bringing these conversations and these tools like LEAP into the public conversation and the public realm, which I believe is extremely healthy to be doing. But is it just my perception that that's happening, or is this actually taking place?
No, I've seen it happen in the 30 plus years of my career, and you know, it's advocacy nonprofit groups like Connections, it's NAMI, it's people like myself. I was ashamed. I was working on the schizophrenia research unit at Columbia University in the 90s, starting in 1989 actually, and I was ashamed. It took me until about 1998 to start talking to my colleagues about my brother. And that's because of public awareness. So what you are doing right now with this interview is a tremendous, tremendous gift to families that are listening who are still, and it's not as many as before, but there are still people who are not sure what to say to loved ones, to friends, when they have a son, a daughter, a husband, a father, a wife with a serious mental illness, and especially one who is doing really, really well, then suddenly has appeared to just sort of slipped off the radar, isn't working anymore, dropped out of school, or doesn't go to family gatherings.
We talk a lot in this community about stigma and trying to address stigma and destigmatize things, which we believe helps with those who are stigmatized and become marginalized to actually integrate and work their way into the community in a very authentic way and in a very natural and healthy way. And I hear what you are saying is that this is part of that process of destigmatizing mental illness and severe mental illness. And how much do you think the contribution of being stigmatized has contributed to mental illness and in those individual patients? I would imagine it's a pretty significant component.
Well, look, any stigma is really important to self-esteem, depression, feeling like you're connected to other people, and all the research and all my experience as a clinician points in the direction of how vitally important relationships are, where somebody feels they can talk to other people about what they're experiencing, what their beliefs are, however unusual or, quote, crazy sounding they might be. And that's what, you know, that's at the core of the LEAP program. The LEAP program is not a anti-stigma program, but it is. It's not its focus. But because because we do the first part of the day, we're going to spend educating people about the nature of these illnesses. And the first task, and I start with telling the story of my relationship with my brother and other loved ones and other very well-known stories in the media, but then turn quickly to the research, because what is so vitally important to destigmatize is to separate the person from their illness.
Mm.
So somebody who seems stubborn or in denial, immature, irresponsible, in fact, is suffering from symptoms like, of course, delusions. A lot of people are aware of them, but the symptom that we focus a lot on in our LEAP training is anosognosia. It's a tongue twister. It simply means unawareness of illness. This is a neurological syndrome that has been coined almost 100 years ago, 99 years ago, by a neurologist in 1919 to describe people who were unaware of neurological deficits. So unaware of paralysis. We now have, since 1989, almost 30 years of research, over 300 studies pointing to this symptom. And when you understand that the person you're trying to help, who's pushing your help away, who goes to a hospital like my brother did before we healed our relationship and he got into treatment reliably, but for 7 years we fought and argued, and he would go to hospitals and lie.
Mm.
And I used to think of him as dishonest. It was a character flaw. It wasn't a character flaw. It was a flaw in his brain chemistry that led him to do exactly what you or I, or I think anybody would do. If we believed with all our heart, admitted to a hospital, wrongfully, locked up in a hospital and coerced into taking medication for an illness we were certain we didn't have, guess what? I would say, I've got bipolar disorder. I'll take the medicine. Or I've got schizophrenia or whatever the illness was, so that I could get back into my life.
Mm.
And the problem is, and what I love about LEAP training, is you see the relief and the immediate understanding on the faces of family members. And we're also training healthcare professionals and law enforcement that you're not dealing with a difficult person. And you're certainly not dealing with a dishonest person. You know, from the person perspective who has mental illness and anosognosia for the illness, unawareness, it's a white lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a white lie. I will take the medicine. I promise you, Lynn, I will take it when I get home. You know, that's what my brother said. And then where did I find his medicine when I got home?
Right. You know, it's so interesting, this anosognosia. I have never heard that term before, and yet it reminds me of, you know, most people that I have known with mental illness that is severe, and it's really tragic that there's actually something going on in the cerebral cortex that makes it impossible for you to recognize or accept that you have a mental illness. Can you talk a little bit more of that physiology or what is exactly going on?
Absolutely. Since 1992, when the first well-controlled studies were conducted to test the hypothesis that my colleagues and I had floated in the literature after doing a big review, we suggested that what we were seeing in schizophrenia and bipolar and related disorders was anosognosia. It wasn't denial. So people started testing it. We now know that it's the prefrontal cortex and dysfunction of the prefrontal cortex, even reduced gray matter, all associated with months, years, and decades of not understanding you're ill. And Lynn, you said something, and we teach this in the LEAP course. We have a slide and a discussion about how important language is. Language matters. Do not say doesn't accept. You just use that phrase, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we would never say to somebody with Parkinson's, they don't accept that they can control their movements.
Right.
Right? Because they can't control their movements, and we know that. And yet, we say that when it comes to people with anosognosia from mental illness. They don't accept they have an illness. Now, it's the other phrase you use is right on. It's precise. It's correct. Phrases we encourage people to use are cannot comprehend,
mm-hmm.
is unable to see that she has been diagnosed with a mental illness. Cannot comprehend, cannot understand, cannot see. So now a lot of people, when they hear that, are like, oh, my gosh, now what? you know, if it's unmovable, it doesn't improve the treatment, by the way, and this is a very important body of research that we cover very quickly, what's left? Well, that's, you know, that's half of the training day is now let's look at a science-based approach, LEAP. LEAP was endorsed just this year by SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse Mental Health Services Administration, the federal government, as an evidence-based promising practice. And let's learn to talk with this person, join with this person in a different way that's not about challenging denial, because it's not denial. And refraining from educating, because that just makes the person angry and defensive, because they know they're not ill. We are saying they are. And instead, finding a very different way to connect where they feel very respected, listened to, and you would like to see them try treatment or go to a clubhouse or accept some other service. And that's what leads to acceptance of treatment and services. And for police officers, it's exactly the same kind of thing. It results very quickly in acceptance of your request, your recommendations. If you're a police officer trained in crisis intervention, for example, you know, you don't do command and control. You'll ask questions. Now, even though you know that you have the power to you know, restrain that person if you have to, if they're in danger, you nevertheless approach them in a very different way. And with LEAP, we reinforce that.
If you're just,
so when we give opinions, when we make recommendations, it's done in a way that is really, frankly, respectful and humble.
Right. If you're just joining us, our guest is Dr. Xavier Amador. He is a psychologist, and he's coming to this area mid-November. November 15th, he'll be at the University of Utah in Salt Lake. November 16th and 17th at the Park City Hospital's Blair Education Center. And it is all about LEAP training. LEAP, listen, empathize, agree, and partner. And Dr. Amador, I'm wondering, I see that this training is obviously for professionals, but it's also for friends and family. I think some of the courses or the times that you'll be teaching, part of the training is just for professionals. One thing we hear among public safety officers, police, firemen, that they don't get a lot of mental health training, if any, and they feel very, very much like their hands are tied when they find themselves in a dangerous situation dealing with someone, when health and safety is very much at risk, shall we say. They need more tools. So this would be a big portion of who you want to speak to. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I mean, if you go to our website, you'll see that there are three groups that we focus on. And one of the groups are criminal justice professionals. So not only EMTs, first responders, public safety, but also judges. We've trained, at this point, probably close to 2,000 judges. And the reason for that is so many persons with serious mental illness who have anosognosia, who are not in treatment, or as the police officer who arrives in the scene says, oh, he's not on his meds, it looks like, right? He's on meds? Yes. The problem is that the core training for any of those criminal justice professionals and corrections officers also we work with, they have to learn a lot of things. And this just has not been on the main curriculum. I was just talking with somebody about the New York City Police Academy, and they don't have a second to spare. However, more and more across the country, public safety officers are getting trained in CIT, crisis intervention training. The problem is it's a very expensive program because it involves up to 30 hours, even 40 hours of class time. I still support it. I promote it. We don't offer that. What we offer is 4.5 hours of class time to teach the fundamentals of recognizing, and frankly, most sheriff's deputies, police officers I've ever worked with, highway patrol, they know how to recognize it usually. But some help with recognizing it, and then quickly, you know, taking your duty belt or gun belt, and different departments call it different things, and thinking about some communication tools there that you will quickly turn to. And instead of command and control, you show them the your hands. Hostage negotiators actually learn mm-hmm. a lot of what we teach in LEAP. And ask, what's going on? What's going on? Talk to the person, reflect back. So the aliens are beaming voices into your head telling you to hurt your family. Is that right? To kill your family. Well, you must be really upset that they call the police, are you? Yeah, well, I'm here to help you. So it's taking a very different approach. It does take time. It actually takes less time because you're not escalating the situation and helping the person to go with you to a safe place and even let you cuff them if that's the protocol that's required or go into an ambulance. So it's an area that is really important to us at LEAP Institute and the LEAP Foundation for many, many reasons. The simple biggest reason is that so many of our loved ones and the patients I've worked with as a professional end up encountering first responders and public safety because mm-hmm. of this symptom and because of the failure, frankly, of our mental health system in this right. country to treat people out in the community. You know, we got people out of the hospitals, we closed the hospitals and reduced the beds, and then we haven't provided the interpersonal services that would engage people in treatment. And that's LEAP is all about that. It's all about building relationships that lead to treatment, building relationships that lead to de-escalation and cooperation.
If you're interested in learning more about LEAP, the LEAP training that's taking place again Thursday, November 15th, and Friday and Saturday, the 16th and 17th, go to leapinstitute.org. You can also contact Connect Summit County for more information. They are the entity that are bringing it or helping bring it to Park City. Dr. Xavier Amador, it's been a pleasure talking to you. This sounds like really valuable information. And as we said before, anyone is welcome to register.
Absolutely. And in fact, we've talked to professionals and family members in criminal justice. For almost 20 years, we've been teaching this, and they always say, we really like the mixed training. So that first day at the University of Utah is everybody's together.
Right.
And then the second and third days for people who want to become trainers and learn how to teach other people, then we separate the groups.
Okay. Dr. Amador, thanks for your time. We'll look forward to meeting
you
next
welcome.
Month. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thank you.